We'll go ahead and get started. Would anybody else like to identify themselves?
Ann Adams from the Amigos of Savieta in New Mexico.
Fantastic. So glad you could join us. So right now on my list of folks who are here, it's Desiree, Rose, myself, Joan Patterson, Bob Baldwin, Lynn Cruz, Karen Deaver, Myrna, Steve, and Deb Sorensen, all from Sherburne, Kathy Allen, Eileen McLaughlin, Jim from Ding Darling, David Raskin from Friends of Alaska, Eden from the Refuge Association, Mark from the Refuge Association, Barbara Volke from Migratory Bird, and Ann Adams from Sylvietta. Anyone else like to be added to the list?
This is Cheryl from Tualatin. I'm on.
Hey, Cheryl. Okay.
And
I'm from
Tualatin.
Was that Linda?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Anyone else?
Tom Trotta.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Good.
Okay. All right. So if everyone could please do us a favor and mute your phone, that would really help keep the background noise. And just for folks who aren't familiar with my voice, I'm Joan Patterson. I am one of the administrators for the Coalition of Refuge Friends and Advocates, which is a closed Facebook group for friends, by friends, to share ideas, support each other as we work to strengthen our nonprofits and to support the refuges that we work with and the refuge system. If folks could just remember to mute the phone, thank you. We can only do a lot of the work that we do with refuges by having some amazing partners. And the most amazing partner is the National Wildlife Refuge Association. They just do an incredible amount of advocacy work on behalf of all of us up on the hill, and the majority of that work is done by Desiree Sorensen Groves, Vice President of Government Affairs, and Carolyn Brower, who's Director of Grassroots Outreach. And if you're like me and really value the incredible work that they're doing, please, please make a donation to the Refuge Association and designate it for their terrific advocacy efforts. Before I turn the call over to Desiree, I just want to take a minute to do an overview of the next hour. As Desiree and I mentioned earlier, the call will be recorded, and we will make that recording available to folks. Eden, who also works through the Refuge Association, will be taking notes, and we'll get those notes also posted. I'm thinking right now they'll probably be posted in the Coalition of Refuge Friends and Advocates Facebook group, but they may also be posted in other locations. So this afternoon's discussion is going to cover four areas, and they are where we are with the appropriation process and legislation. Secondly, it will be what you can do to help, especially now. What can you do to start planning some district visits? And folks, please remember, mute your phone. Thank you so much. Thirdly, we're going to talk about what's happening in Alaska, and thank you, David Raskin, President of Friends of Alaska. He's going to help with that discussion. And finally, before we wrap things up, we'd like to share what issues you're facing and how we can help each other keep informed and provide support. We don't want any friends organization to feel alone because we're all part of the refuge system, and I stress the word system. So Desiree is going to bring us up to date on all of these various topics, and after each topic, she'll open it up for comments and suggestions. So any questions about that? If you have a question, you can unmute your phone. If not, I'm going to turn it over to Desiree, and I thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us, Desiree, And folks, please remember just to keep the phones muted. And Desiree, would you just remind folks when you open it up for comments to unmute their phones?
Yes, that's a good point because I almost did the same thing.
Okay. Thanks so much.
No problem. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. I am Desiree Sorensen Groves. I'm the Vice President of Government Affairs for the National Wildlife Refuge Association. I know many of you on the call, and hello to all of you. And many of you are new to me, but I really appreciate that you're on here on this call. And very briefly, the Refuge Association is a nonprofit organization based in Washington, D.C., and we have been around since 1975. We were formed by former Fish and Wildlife Service employees, and we have former Fish and Wildlife Service employees on our staff, including our president, Jeff Haskett, and our chief operating officer, Mark Musaeus, who is on the call, and Mark was the deputy regional director in the Southeast. So we have great expertise inside the organization. I've been doing this with the Refuge Association for almost 13 years now, and Caroline Brower, who is on the Metro but will be joining us shortly as well, is our...
I'm here.
Oh, she's here. There we go. She made it. She is our Director of Government Affairs. So between the two of us, we're kind of your go-to people when it comes to what's going on the Hill. Where we are right now, the Congress is working through the fiscal year 2019 appropriations bill. And of course, that's so important because appropriations impacts every single thing that happens on every refuge. So when you're lacking staff and resources, that comes down to funding. Today, the House Interior Appropriations Committee actually had their what's called a full committee markup, and they approved their appropriations bill, which will then go to the House floor. The Senate has just done subcommittee action, so it has not been approved by the full Appropriations Committee yet. And we don't know, because it hasn't gone to the full committee, we don't actually know what the Senate has proposed for refuge system funding. But in the House, they have proposed about a $2 million increase for operations and maintenance. So that's the main bulk of what gets things done on your refuge. They've also included... for the Land and Water Conservation Fund, they've proposed about $47 million, and about $37 million of that or so is for projects. Some of the money does not go to projects. It goes for overhead to run the programs and in holdings. And of that, 37, only about $27 million goes to projects other than what's called the Highlands in New Jersey and New York. But there are some great projects on there, and we just got that list, and I can talk about that at the end if you haven't seen it yet. It just came out, we got it yesterday, last night, so that's new. We also, FY18 was decided a few months ago, and in that, there was a provision to give the Fish and Wildlife Service an additional $50 million to address the backlog. So that would be projects that are on these books of backlog issues. And the Fish and Wildlife Service just sent the list of projects over to Congress yesterday. And so we got that list, which is great. Most of the projects are pretty wonderful. There is one, the number one project is oil exploration readiness at the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. We're still trying to find out a little bit more about what that is, but there are some great things in here. There are, I know, a refuge in Alabama got $5 million. This is the Wheeler Refuge, and we'll talk a little bit about that because they've been doing a great job of building community support, and it really helped to help them get $5.4 million in this bill. So there's a lot of great projects. I mean, I'm looking at the list, and it's pretty big, from Alaska to California to Oklahoma, it's all over, and I will share this with folks if they haven't seen it yet. Other things that have occurred, there is no Fish and Wildlife Service director that has been nominated yet, so just to make sure that nothing has changed since the last time we've spoken. The Fish and Wildlife Service right now is really working to implement various secretarial orders. A lot of those have to do with increased recreational access, a lot on hunting and fishing, and a lot of others. In fact, it may be something that we want to do a completely separate phone call about to kind of think about what is going on with these secretary orders. And that's a result of elections. When you have elections, you have consequences. And the administration sets the tone of what the priorities are. In the Obama administration, it was more things like the urban refuge program, which is great. And in this administration, it's more access for recreational uses like hunting and fishing. The other thing that has happened in the past couple days is the Senate, Senator Mitch McConnell, who is the majority leader, has said that there will be no August recess. And that has, I would say, good and bad things. We depend upon the August recess to help get folks on refuges, members of Congress. But on a good note, it means that they will be buckling down trying to get a lot of stuff done. That also is a mixed bag. Sometimes what they want to get done is good, and sometimes it's not good. But the thing that they've been talking about is actually passing appropriations bills on time before September 30th. That actually is a really good thing. It helps provide certainty for refugees around the United States if they could actually get their money on time, which means they wouldn't have to spend it all in a couple months, and they would have more certainty in order to figure out what they want to work on. So that's a quick overview, but I want to just turn it over to folks. If you have any questions, unmute your phone, and please ask away. Nobody has any questions?
No, I do. I had to unmute first. Barbara.
Hey, Barbara.
So what's the implications for the Santa Ana and the wall funding in terms of what you just said about the budgets? There was that exclusion of building the wall through Santa Ana.
Absolutely. So that is only good through FY18. So it's only good through September 30th, 2018, and then all bets are off. That is not included, to my knowledge, in the House version so far. That could be something that gets added. My guess is it would not be added on the floor of the House, but it could get added in a conference committee. It just depends.
And that's the FY19 budget.
Yes,
that you're talking about. Okay,
exactly. It is in the FY18. It is law that there is no spending that can occur in FY18 by the Fish and Wildlife Service on the wall at Santa Ana.
Okay. So at some point we can talk about what we could do about that situation. It'd be great, but we don't need to talk about it now. You've got lots to talk about.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Other questions?
Desiree, it's Joan. I guess I got a little bit lost about the $50 million in the FY18 budget.
Sure.
The backlog and that oil exploration readiness. Could you explain that a little bit more?
Sorry. So it's construction, and it's mainly going to be things that are repairs or rehabbing something because it's on a backlog list. They are putting on here on the list. I'll read it directly. Improvements to existing facilities and construction of outbuildings to support heightened levels of activity. Now, they could be looking at bunkhouses, and those may not actually be on the refuge. They may be to support people coming to the refuge. That's why we need to get a little bit more information on what it actually means. We don't want to get completely crazy over what this means if it actually is things that could benefit the refuge, because as many of you guys know, we, the Refuge Association, are vehemently against drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and so we are concerned about anything that would help make that happen faster. So this construction, this $4 million, is something that we are looking at and working to communicate with the Fish and Wildlife Service to find out exactly what it means. Does that help?
Yeah, that helps a lot. Thank you.
Okay.
Desiree, this is Eileen.
Hi, Eileen.
And can I ask for you to post that list somewhere? Or
yes.
So we could have access to it?
Absolutely. We will definitely. It is public information. We will send it to – put it on – we'll put it on we'll put it on the Coalition's Facebook page, and we'll probably put it up on our website as well so that others can look at it. Because, like I said, there's a lot of really good projects in here. And I think it'd be, you can go through it. It's long. That's why I can't just like point out, you know, if there's something from Sherburn or, you know, I'm looking, but I'm not seeing anything quickly. So I'll post, we'll make sure that we post it so that you can see it.
Thank you.
Desiree, this is Myrna at Sherburn. And
yeah.
I have a question. We were lucky enough to have Congressman Tom Emmer and his staffer at the refuge on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And we're planning a meeting with his staffer, who really doesn't know, well, neither of them know a whole lot about the Fish and Wildlife Service, but that's why they come to learn. But if we're going to sit down and meet with the staffer, in light of the appropriations process happening, what, or with any of the senator staffers, what would you want us to have on the agenda, and what's a good way to approach it?
Absolutely. And this is going to segue right into what we're talking about, but I'll address it a little right now. I think the biggest thing that you can do is show them what is going on in your refuge and talk about what increased funding could mean, what you could do or what you're not doing, because your refuge has experienced some budget cuts over the years. And that's happened all around the United States. But I would also show them the great things that are going on the refuge. That's the best way to get somebody excited about what is going on. I would do a little research about Mr. Emmer. I don't know him at all, but we can help you with that. You know, what his interests are. Is he interested in, say, environmental education, or is he interested in water quality? You can hone what you're talking about to make sure that also in working with the Fish and Wildlife Service, that the tour that member of Congress gets on the refuge is something interesting to them. If they're not interested in water quality and you're showing them all about how wetlands filter, you know, sediments and pollutions, it might not be as interesting, but maybe it would be. I think the Fish and Wildlife Service does a great job in making that kind of stuff relevant and interesting to whomever, whatever staff or members go to the refuge. And I think it's great that the member could be there, but it's also fantastic if staff can be there. And I'll talk a little bit more about that as well in the next topic of what you can do. Do we have time for one more question on kind of where we are right now? Nope. Okay. Well, I can move into kind of what you can do, because it fits in a lot with what Myrna was just talking about. I think one of the most important things you as friends can possibly do is get members of Congress and decision makers at all levels out to your refuge. It doesn't have to be a hard advocacy ask. It's about showing them how your refuge is a community asset and why it's important. And I'm going to use the example of the Wheeler Refuge, which is in Decatur, Alabama. And they've really built both the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Friends Group working together have built really strong relationships with their congressional districts or their congressional members. But I would say even more importantly, they have made those relationships with their city and county leaders. And those city and county leaders came to Washington 2 months ago in April. And those city leaders lobbied on behalf of their Wheeler National Wildlife Refuge. And it had a huge impact because you're having those are conservative Republicans down every single one of them. I don't think there's any Democrats in that city council. But they came to Washington to talk about how the Wheeler Refuge is a community asset to them and why it's so important. And it takes a lot of time. That's not something that just happens immediately. It's over years of building relationships and bringing those people out to the refuge and showing them how these places are so important to the community. Now, it's easier for some people to do than others. You know, you have Sherburn is pretty pretty suburban now. You have who am I looking at? Sylvietta, it's going to be tougher. You're much more rural. Florida Panther, you're quite, you know, urban. Kathy down in Florida, Kathy Allen at PIPS. These are places that have a large population base. For some folks, it's going to be harder. Kenai, though, you do have Soldotna and you have even Anchorage. the main thing is these local leaders are the ones that can help carry your water. And so one of the most important things that we would like you to do is put in requests to your members of Congress and your local county and city leaders and ask them to come to the refuge. Now, you're going to do that in coordination with your Fish and Wildlife Service folks, you know, your refuge manager, the deputy, visitor services people. But that's honestly one of the most important things that you can possibly do. And I would say that these members of Congress, regardless of their party, they kind of need this. Washington is an extremely dysfunctional place right now, and at times it's actually depressing. I mean, it's every single day it seems like there's something else that's negative going on. And I think that we as humans need something positive in our lives. And so I think it's important on a kind of human level to try to get these folks out to see all this amazing stuff that is happening on refuges. And I was talking to Jim Kurth. Mark and I were at a meeting with him over at Department of Interior, and he just said it to him. He said it to us in a meeting, and he said, you know, often here in Washington, we're so wrapped up inside of our bubble that we forget about the amazing work going on all over the United States. There is still amazing conservation happening all over the United States with dedicated friends, volunteers, and Fish and Wildlife Service employees doing great work every single day. And I think we have to remember that there is still great stuff happening and not get so dwelling on the challenges that we're facing that we don't see the forest through the trees. So that's one thing. Second thing I would say, I think it's really important to write a letter to your congressional delegation, so your two senators and your House member, urging them to support increased funding for the refuge system and thereby your National Wildlife Refuge. You know, the appropriations process, I actually think they're going to work pretty hard to try to get these done by the end of September. You know, they've said that they want to do it, and I think they're on their way. So this is the time to ask that. If there is a Land and Water Conservation Fund request that is from the administration, you should include that in yours. I'm looking here. Is there anyone? I'm looking at the list real quick, and I will share this as well. In Florida, there's Everglades Headwaters, Tom, which is not exactly in your neck of the woods, but it has that project itself. And Jim, for Ding, that Everglades Headwaters request has implications for your refuges as well. But I can share this list for folks as well. That's a big deal. And we want to make sure that members of Congress know how important that is. Media outreach would be kind of the third pillar that I would ask you all to think about. And that would be everything from a letter to the editor to talk about why your refuge is important to your community. And we can help you draft those, or you can draft it and we can help take a look at it. Happy to do that. I would see if you have any contacts with a local reporter. I would see if a reporter would do a story about the opportunities at your refuge. So whether it's bird watching, hiking, volunteering, maybe they would want to do a spotlight on a volunteer and what they're doing. I think that some feel-good stories would be really helpful. And then let us know so that we can share these stories as well. And not just us, the Fish and Wildlife Service. I mean, I think that there's ways that we all need to work together to amplify how important these places are to local communities. So that's three kind of quick areas, none of them being actually fast to implement. But I think that is really the most important things that friends can be doing right now. With that, I will open it up to questions.
Desiree, it's Joan. In the past, the Refuge Association has put together recess action kits that give all of us copies of letters that, you know, formats of letters that we can use to make the request for a visit to the refuge and fact sheets and various things like that. Will the Refuge Association be putting one out this year?
Thank you, Joan Patterson, for that softball question. Ooh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and in fact, full disclosure, Joan has helped us update that so that we kind of get jump started on that. So we will put that out as, and it's got sample like letters to send to your member of Congress to request that they come to your refuge. So there's sample letters to the editor. So it's a great piece. And also, full disclosure, so Joan, when she worked at the Refuge Association, actually developed this. And it's a great kit. It's basic information, but it's great to have it in all one place. So we are committed to doing that. Eden, you're on the call with me. You and I will work on that, get you started on making sure that gets up in the next couple of days. We'll put it out in Word documents, and then we've also got a more graphic, pretty version coming out as well. But thank you.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, sounds good.
Excellent. Who else we got?
This is Keith Chesney from Sherburne. A question about, are there sample letters to members of Congress to ask for increased funding for the refuge? I mean,
you bet.
Give
there
us
is.
An idea of the
yes.
magic words.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, we'll have spaces where, you know, insert information about your amazing refuge. And, you know, you'll put, you know, pieces in there about why Sherburne is so important to the community and, you know, some of the things that you're going. And we, you know, if it's increased funding, you can say, you know, if the refuge system were to get increased funding, here's some things that we could do. And here's what we're not doing. You know, we're still doing great work on the refuge, but here's what we could do if we had more. If there are opportunities to bring in others in your community, meaning maybe you have a local Ducks Unlimited chapter. Maybe you have a Sierra Club chapter. Some other groups that might be interested in signing on to that letter. That would be also incredibly powerful. Depending on where you are, it's going to have more impact. But I think the more groups that you can show how these places are important to you will really help. But yes, Steve, we have that is in the Recess Action Kit, and we will make sure that you have that. And again, we put it in a Word document so that you can easily cut and paste, and you don't have to, you know, have formatting issues.
Thank you.
Yes. Any other questions? Okay. All right. Well, now I'd like to move on to kind of a big issue that's going on. And I'm going to have David Raskin help us a little bit. As a refresher, I think most of you are aware that there was a provision in the tax law that passed at the end of last year that included opening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil and gas drilling. And I know that President Trump has said it several times that he did not realize that this was such a big deal. And once he realized it was a big deal, that it was something that he really wanted to make sure happened. And I think for a lot of members of Congress, they didn't realize it was in there. Or if they did, it was like almost too late. The train had left the station for many members. And the tax cuts were the number one priority for the Republican Party going into a year with midterm elections. And when you're looking at huge tax cuts versus even drilling in the Arctic Refuge, we lost people like Senator Collins from Maine, a Republican who has always been with us. We lost Senator McCain, who is a Republican from Arizona, who has always been against drilling in the Arctic. And I think that we have opportunities to eventually repeal this. But that's the only way that that's the only way we completely stop drilling, because it is law now. But as it's law, there are certain processes that the Fish and Wildlife Service must go through in order to open the Arctic Refuge to the drilling. So that's where we come to what's happening right now, which is a scoping period. And I'm going to throw it over to David Raskin, who's the president of the Friends of Alaska Refuges, to kind of talk about how you can help with this issue, and I'll chime in as needed, but let me throw it to David, who is an expert on this issue. David?
Hi, Desiree. Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, great. I can never tell whether my phone's on or off mute. Well, this has gotten to be very hot and heavy, And the scoping period comments are due on the 19th of this month. So everybody can certainly help by submitting comments on the scoping. And Desiree, can you post the website for the comments and the procedure to do that?
Yes.
So the first thing you can do is send in comments. And there are many problems with this because the coastal plain, as many of you probably know, is the biological heart of the refuge. That's where the porcupine caribou herd calves and raises their young. And this is the sacred area where life begins for the Gwich'in people, both Canada and the United States. And so this would be a tremendous blow to them if the development occurs. And they talk about, you know, a small acreage that's just a footprint, but that's just a bunch of nonsense because there's much more than the drilling pads. There'll be roads, pipelines. It will be a spider web all across the coastal plain. So that's another thing that one needs to look at. Then there are all the other problems it creates, such as producing more oil to exacerbate global warming. There are sociological problems for the people who live and depend upon subsistence in the refuge. There are all kinds of problems with the melting of permafrost, which will cause subsidence in all the structures up there that they're going to build, as well as release huge amounts of methane gas, which is far worse than carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas. Another thing that you can also comment on is the fact that the U.S. and Canada entered into a binding agreement back in the 80s to protect the porcupine caribou herd. And we are then clearly violating that agreement. The government of Canada has raised objections about this. And the president's response, our president's response, was to say, well, then, if you oppose this, I'm going to tax your oil coming into the United States, which was not received very kindly by the Canadian government. So this has become a very, very contentious issue, and we certainly need to work as hard as we can in the scoping period. Then there'll be an environmental statement generated. They think that they can put out a draft environmental statement in less than 6 months, which is, you know, is ridiculous because they'll have to jam it through and not do it properly. The CCP, the Comprehensive Conservation Plan and accompanying environmental statement for the Arctic Refuge took about 4 years to do and do carefully, and that's when Secretary and President Obama accepted the recommendation for full wilderness, which included the coastal plain, and submitted it to Congress. So they are doing everything they can to shortcut and jam this through, and we need to do everything we can to resist that.
Thank you,
so I
David.
That's a summary.
Yes, no, that's a great summary. So we, the Refuge Association, will be doing substantive comments. We have a regional representative who lives in Anchorage. His name is Mike Boylan, and he will help us with substantive comments. But we will also put out an alert with sample comments. And that is what would be really helpful, to have friends commenting, and not just your friends group, but individuals in your friends group. What does this mean? If you live in Minnesota, why is this important? Well, I would say, number one, you have birds that go back and forth. Number two, the law actually changed the purpose of the refuge. For the first time, a purpose of a refuge is oil and gas. That's enormous. Now, the scoping that the BLM is doing is, and I'm going to quote here, the BLM seeks to identify relevant comments, concerns, and or issues that will influence the scope of the EIS and guide its development, including the formation of alternatives to the proposed action within the parameters outlined in the law. The reason that that's important is the friends around the United States can comment about how, number one, the refuge system is managed as a system, and this is one of the most intact ecosystems in the entire world. And this has implications then to your refuge because it's managed as a system and you share a lot of the same birds. This is, and we can help every single refuge in the United States find birds that migrate back and forth. That's why the Arctic is so important. I think that on a separate note, but I think it's important to write it, is that the law changed the purpose. Now, the BLM can't address that, but I think it's important that we as Americans and people who care about the refuge system point out that this changed the purpose of a refuge and that we have a problem with that. That's a really big deal. Another thing that I think would be helpful to point out is that this is either wilderness or proposed wilderness. This was proposed wilderness by President Obama, and it's so important that it's the first time a president of the United States submitted a wilderness recommendation to Congress since 1974. So it's a vitally important area for the United States. I agree. I think that, you know, including the importance of this refuge to the Gwich'in people, a First Nation who depend upon the caribou for their food, it's their life. And, you know, we have indigenous people in the United States who live a subsistence lifestyle, and this is directly threatening their way of life that they've had for tens of thousands of years. So it's bigger than just us. And I think it'd be helpful if everyone kind of pitched in, because, you know, it may not be your refuge today, but it could be your refuge tomorrow. And I think our strength is going to come as we band together on these issues. And that's going to be our next issue that we talk about in a couple minutes. But before we get to that, can I open it up for questions? Yeah, go ahead.
Can I just add a couple comments first?
Yes.
And that is that you might also point out that the most recent survey by Yale and George Mason University showed that 70% of the American public are opposed to drilling in the refuge. And furthermore, at the public meetings in Fairbanks and in Anchorage, a large majority of the people speaking were opposed to drilling in the refuge. So people who say, well, Alaskans are for it, they are not.
Okay. Go ahead.
This is Barbara Vogel jumping in with a question. Just to clarify so I'm sure what you're talking about, when you talk about commenting on scoping, what exactly do you mean?
Mark, do you want to, since you're the former Fish and Wildlife Service person on the phone, do you want to explain what scoping means?
Sure. So what a refuge does when they enter into any kind of a planning effort, they hold a scoping meeting, in which basically is an opportunity to inform the public what the intent of the planning effort they're going to do, and then to receive feedback from the public on their opinions as to how that plan should be done. So for example, every refuge is supposed to have a comprehensive conservation plan, which is a 15-year management plan or a vision for that refuge. In the scoping sessions at the beginning, they involve public input. So they could hear from the public as to, what they would like to see in terms of habitat management or wildlife. Mostly it involves things such as public use and recreational opportunities. They'll get input from other organizations and from state entities. They use that information together to then try to develop a plan.
That makes sense, Barbara? Okay.
Yes.
Let me just add, too, I mean, all these major points that we've talked about, those are things that in your comments you should tell the BLM that those things should be studied, sociological impacts, the impacts on the Gwich'in people, you know, global warming. That whole laundry list needs to be thoroughly examined in the environmental process.
So another clarification question for me, for Desiree. Letters to BLM in a case like this, should they be copied to our congressional representatives as well?
I think it's helpful, yes. I think that's a great idea because members of Congress need to understand that this is not something that, that Americans agree with, just like that study that David was referring to, and we can put a link to that as well. David, if you would send that to me and or Joan, we can make sure that we get it out there. I know I have it somewhere in my messages, but I think it's important that members of Congress understand this. And I say that because the only way to completely stop this is to repeal that portion of the tax law. There is a repeal bill that was introduced about 2 weeks ago, and it would repeal that portion of the tax law. The truth is that is not going to happen under this Congress, and it, even if it happened under a new Congress, if, you know, in 2019 when a new Congress comes in, if they had the votes, which they probably won't, there's no way that the president is going to sign it. So we're really looking at a full repeal in 2021, so with a new administration that would sign something that would repeal it, because it's hard for me to think that we would get two-thirds of a majority in 2019 to override a veto. But that's really what we're gearing toward. We are gearing toward slowing down the process at every point that we can, and making sure that the BLM does its due diligence in studying this the way that it should be studied, so that it is clear to and the American people can see what the consequences are, number one. And number two, we want to make sure that we are building support with members of Congress so that eventually we can repeal this portion. That is what we have to do. We must repeal this portion of the tax law. That is the only way to stop it from happening.
Okay. This is Eileen. I wanted to comment in here. One of the things in the expediting of this whole EIS process under NEPA is, you know, comes to mind. We had a presentation on what the Fish and Wildlife Service was told on how they have to expedite NEPA, and I'm guessing the BLM was given similar instructions. But in the scoping period, even before that, the agency was directed to formulate a plan of what this should needs to be as far as like what the alternatives would be, even before scoping, and be it, so it'll be they move the process far enough along so that when the scoping comes in, well, they're already ready to go into the draft. And that's the kind of instruction that the Interior is giving the agency. So it's really going to hurt the kind of detail that's covered by the draft EIR. And in the slowdown, which you mentioned, there are going to have to be challenges, because when the draft comes out, and you know, that's got to be questioned. And they're only going to give 30 days comment time. Not even on a complicated one, they're shortening the comment period so that they, even if they have, you know, and then they have to expedite the follow-up period to start turning out that final EIR. It's a horrendous. So that's a concern I see playing out here, and I've seen that locally as well already.
Thanks, Eileen. You're right, and I mean this, but it's troubling, but it's not surprising. I mean, this administration, the folks that are in the administration right now, have many of them have been here before. Many of them we know. The deputy secretary David Bernhardt had worked on opening the Arctic refuge to drilling under the Bush administration. So it's not surprising, and you know, these are kind of the ping pong sort of things that have happened under administrations for years. So it's not surprising that this administration wanted to open the Arctic refuge to drilling, and that they would try to do so on a very expedited, fast pace. None of it is surprising. It's just that's where we are right now. And so, yes, when Eileen, when you're talking about challenges, I assume you mean legal, and there will be, I'm sure, legal challenges throughout the process, because also, when you're doing something so quickly, you're going to, things can slip through the cracks that shouldn't. And a lot of these issues are really things that the American people deserve to have studied. The law was passed so quickly that there was no debate really about drilling in the Arctic Refuge. And that was this huge, it was a small component of this huge bill, but yet it has enormous ramifications for wildlife conservation in the United States. And that, I think, we as Americans deserve to have more open discussion, and we need analysis of. And that's what I think, as Americans, we have the right and the we have the responsibility to request that our government does this. So that's kind of where I come at it from. Does anybody else have anything to add to that before we move on to some other local issues?
Yes, Bob Baldwin, Kenai. Desiree and David mentioned migratory birds in connection with ANWR. I think it's important to mention the Migratory Bird Treaty Act when discussing that, because there is legislation involved there, and I think it's a point of finesse maybe, but good to mention.
Absolutely, Bob. That's a great point. I will include that. The MBTA, even though the Fish and Wildlife Service has issued guidance to weaken it, I think that's another point that we should, that we as friends and refuge advocates should mention. So with that, I'm going to, we only have 10 minutes left, but I wanted to talk about, from all of your points of view, about some other things that are happening on your refuges around the country. We hear about things happening all the time, like Bob up at Kenai is, and David Raskin with the Friends of Alaska Refuges are dealing with the repeal of a rule at the Kenai Refuge that would allow predator control. So, you know, killing of predators like brown bears in order to falsely increase numbers of game species. We know of an issue at the Bosque Refuge in New Mexico where they're looking at putting a transmission line in some very critical habitat for sandhill cranes. And so I'm just wondering, and kind of open this up to you guys that are on the phone, I mean, are you guys facing some local issues? I know, Jim, at Ding Darling, you guys just got a boatload of really nasty water that came from Lake Okeechobee in the last couple of days, which not only doesn't look nice, but also has ecological impact. But maybe if there's, you know, if some of you have some other issues that you just want to raise that you've either at your refuge or you've heard about that you're concerned, and if you don't, that's fine. I think that, you know, what Joan and I were thinking is she would put a message on the Coalition's Facebook page for a place for you to post things as you hear about them, so that all of us are aware. And if there are critical times, we know that we can call upon other friends around the country to help each other out. Because again, it is a system. And when one comes under threat, it has implications for the rest. It may not be your refuge today, but it could be tomorrow. So with that, I'll open it up and just see if anybody has some examples either at your refuge or things that you have been hearing about. Well, fantastic. The refuge system is doing great.
Desiree, it's Joan. Of course I've got an issue.
Okay.
So, and this has to do with Alaska. Congress changed the purpose, right, for Arctic National Wildlife Refuge by including as one of its primary purposes drilling for oil and gas, right?
Right.
Okay. But so then I'm concerned if this could happen at Arctic, could it happen at other places? Could Congress change the purpose and objectives of a refuge? Because in the Friends policy, it says Friends are established with an organizational mission of supporting the purposes and objectives of a service site or program for which they are affiliated. I'm concerned that we're being forced as friends into supporting things that we don't believe in, and I'm wondering, what can we do about this?
So technically, of course, Congress can change the purpose of a refuge. They're Congress. They can make laws. The administration can also change the purpose of a refuge. I don't know if they can do that. They can make the purpose of the refuge when it is established. I don't know if they can administratively change the purpose of a refuge without approval from Congress. Actually, I'd ask Mark if you know, can the Fish and Wildlife Service change the purpose of a refuge without congressional approval once it's been established?
That is a great question. I assume it cannot be done administratively, but I will get confirmation on that. I assume it takes congressional approval.
I'm guessing too, but it just occurred to me that I don't know that. I've never thought about it until this very second. But that said, there's a Congress, of course, can do anything. They can pass laws, and those laws can be unconstitutional, and then you have to challenge it to the Supreme Court. Which is, technically a good way to govern, right? We have checks and balances. But it does mean that that can occur. It is possible. I haven't, I've thought about what that could mean to a friends group, like Friends of Alaska, has a partnership agreement with the Fish and Wildlife Service, and it talks about supporting the Fish and Wildlife Service and the mission of the refuges. I don't know what that means if a purpose gets changed and it's not something that a friends group supports, what that would mean. I think we're in somewhat uncharted territory.
Yeah, definitely.
But something to think about for sure.
Okay.
Anyone else have any things going on in either your refuge or things you've been hearing about? Anne over at Sylvietta, everything all good with Mexican wolves? Tom, everything great with Florida panthers?
No, I did have a question there about oil drilling in the refuge. We've fought that a number of times because we don't own the mineral rights.
Is it Tom?
It's always possible, yes.
Oh, oil drilling at Florida panther?
Yeah, they wanted to actually frack a well on the border. And it was, it was an angled well, so it would have been under the refuge. Fortunately, some other things happened with the fracking and Florida shut it down. But it's always possible because we do not own the mineral rights. And Big Cypress, which is our national preserve next to us, they have sonic machines there right now looking for oil because they don't own the mineral rights. So it's a big problem.
Wow. I did not know that. I'm sure Mark did. I will say it is actually not uncommon at all for the federal government not to own the mineral rights under a National Wildlife Refuge. If you go to refuges in Louisiana and Texas and New Mexico, most of the time the Fish and Wildlife Service does not. Because in some cases it's exorbitantly expensive to try to buy those rights when you've created a refuge. Now, places in Alaska are different. They were created through they were in the public domain. So they have always been in the ownership of the federal government. So the federal government has always owned the mineral rights. But Tom, that's some interesting stuff, and we should definitely talk about that. There has been some issues around the refuge system, which is what's called drainage, when there is fracking, and it's the byproducts that can be on the refuge that have adverse effects. There are some times that oil drilling can occur on a refuge, and it can be okay. But in Louisiana and these other places, there's a lot of drilling that occurs on those refuges. But there's also some bad things that happen. There are leaks. There are wells that fail. There are infrastructure that has remained when the wells are abandoned. Mark, anything to add?
No. Are you covered?
I have one comment on the Arctic Wildlife Refuge, and that is when I went to the representative to discuss it with him, and we had a fairly good discussion, And then at the end, he said that he was going to go with what the residents of Alaska wanted. So if we had more information of how it polled in Alaska, it would have been very helpful.
Okay, that's helpful to know, Tom. We will get some of those more recent polls out to you. And to be perfectly honest, I think a lot of our organizations were caught a little flat-footed when we were not expecting this to be included in the tax law or the tax bill as when it was proposed. So a lot of our organizations were, you know, scrambling, looking for fresh data, fresh polls, fresh information. And because it happened so fast, I mean, I think we had a good effort, but it was difficult. And our coalition itself was a little bit fractured. We had come from a few years of relatively little threats, and honestly, our coalition was arguing about other things internally. That happens with coalitions all the time, but it had those consequences of us being a little flat-footed in our response because we were so not expecting it, to be perfectly honest. But I think you're right when, of course, members in other states need to know if they're going to oppose something that is supported by an entire congressional delegation from a state, they have to know that there are so many people in that state that are against it. And that happens in any state. If you had the entire Nebraska congressional delegation who wants something, it's very difficult for people from outside Nebraska to oppose it. That's just the way Congress has always worked. And it's just, and the entire Alaska delegation has always been for drilling in the Arctic. That said, Alaska is different. It has some of the most, resources of any state in our country. And when it became a state, the United States required a certain amount of public lands to be there. So we made a lot as the United States, having Alaska enter the United States, it came with a cost to the people of Alaska. They didn't get to keep all of their minerals and all of their land. They didn't get to do whatever they wanted to it. That was the price of becoming a state. And we have to remember that. And that happened with many states in the United States. So there are costs to have the privilege of being an American. And that was something that Alaska gave up because they wanted statehood. And so we need to remember that. But we will definitely get you some of that, the latest data. Since this has become law, our coalition has ramped up greatly. I will say that we are in the process of hiring a campaign director who will oversee this campaign. What we're looking at is a 3 or 4 year campaign to repeal this portion of the tax law. And it's going to take all of us working together to do it. So I am cognizant of time. It is one past the hour, and I want to make sure I know everybody has other things going on. And if you have other questions, please feel free to email myself directly, or Joan, or members of the coalition, and we can follow up on this. And Joan, I'll pass it to you for any also parting words.
Okay, so I'll make this quick. I want to first of all thank everybody who's on the call. You know, it takes your time, and I really appreciate everything you're doing for the refuge that you're associated with and for the entire refuge system. Hey, Refuge Association, thank you so much for sharing this information with us. And folks, please, please consider donations to the Refuge Association so that they can continue this valuable work. If you're not already a member of the Facebook group, Coalition of Refuge Friends and Advocates, we invite everybody to join. We're really looking for ways that we can help each other out as friends to friends and continue to partner with people such as, like I say, the Refuge Association. So that's all that I have. Desiree, anything else from you?
No, I appreciate it. Thank you for the shout out about donations. Your donations to us are exactly what goes toward our efforts to fight these things. So it's really important If you have the ability to give to the Refuge Association, it goes directly to what we're talking about on all of these issues. That's what we do. So it every little bit helps, even if it's only a small amount that you or your organization can give. So thank you.
Desiree, can I just add, this is David again. A number of years ago at one of the big Refuge get-togethers in Washington, we started a movement for the Friends groups to give on an annual basis to the Refuge Association, and our Friends group pledges 5% of all of our unrestricted funds every year as a donation to the Refuge Association for all they do for us.
Thank you very much, David, and we appreciate it. We appreciate any amount because it all helps. Thank you. With that, I will sign off. We will put out a recording of this shortly so that you can review it if you would like to. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody.